GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, Santa Cruz, and Sutter Maternity and Surgery Center, community-based, not-for-profit. It is Saturday, December 25th, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, the geek news of the week. That's right. Happy holidays, everyone. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP. In this special holiday edition, we will not be taking your calls, no, because Rick's not here, unfortunately. But we love you anyways. And if you'd like to ask us a question, please do so by emailing us. You can go to geekspeak.org. Also at geekspeak.org, you can send us information about music you might have written. The music today is by Al, I think, right, Al?
Yep, I think that's mine.
And it's delicious. We'd love to have your theme song for the show. We're always looking for new content for the radio, and we're also looking for images and such for our website. And just to share the love. GeekSpeak is a creative common endeavor. Share and share alike. All right, in the air room with me, my name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me is Miles Elam. He's a software engineer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And my goodness, you're loud, sir. We also have Al Luckow, a new media architect. Hi, Al.
Hello, everybody.
All right, so let's go ahead and start the news off. And I think, Mr. Luckow, I'm going to ask you about the inner you.
Oh, yeah.
The beautiful part of you that's in the inside.
Well, shouldn't we say, like, Merry Christmas or something?
Oh,
or
wait, what is
that? Happy Holidays or whatever you want to call it.
Isn't it Halloween?
It's a holiday. So I didn't want to confuse people.
No, it's okay. Lyle is typical of many geeks. It gets Halloween and Christmas mixed up.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. Oh, so we're in the decimal system today? Not the octal system?
So I didn't want to say happy holidays because you might confuse it with Halloween.
That's right. So Merry Christmas.
I guess Christmas would be the one that the people who are celebrating today would be into.
My family celebrates Christmas.
Yes.
In fact, I'm not even here.
Actually, it's around 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. It's actually 10:08.
And people are opening presents oftentimes.
Yeah.
And listening to GeekSpeak.
Of course. Well, if GeekSpeak is on the air,
you know,
everyone
what?
In California listens.
People open presents at like 7 a.m.
That's right. Well, if they have kids, they do.
Yeah.
If I was thinking if you had kids, you were waking up at about 5 a.m. Can we open our presents yet? Can we open our presents yet?
Absolutely.
Well, right. I can tell you about
my Google. Kids woke me up at 6:30 this morning, actually. 6:30 with presents. But let's go on.
What are we talking
stuff.
About? Okay,
yes.
All right. I can tell you about the Google Body browser, which is actually
sounds dirty.
Well, you know, it's a matter of opinion, I guess, because you are able to open this thing up and it shows you it's a woman, and at first she's wearing clothes, and then there's a little slider. And then you pull the slider down, and then it removes her clothes, and then you keep going, it removes her skin, and then it goes to your muscle, and then it shows the nervous system. And
no, I'm seeing that. Actually, can you zoom in on it, too?
Yeah, yes. Actually, it skips a step. It goes straight from clothed with skin to skin's gone.
That's right.
So oh, really?
There's no,
yeah.
And there's no nudity.
It's got, well, no. Well, there's no clothes, but it is a skeleton.
There's super nudity.
Do you consider a skeleton nude?
I do. Unless it's wearing clothes.
Yeah. Okay, well, if you really want to look at nude skeletons, the Google Body Browser, you can go to Google and just type Google Body Browser in. Now, the one thing about it, though,
or just hang out at the airport and check out some of those images. Hey-o.
The one thing about it, though, is you've got to upgrade all your browsers. It only works in, like, Google Chrome. It didn't seem to work in Safari. It's really kind of custom-tuned to be their browser.
Right.
But it's worth a look.
Yeah,
you know?
It works in Google Chrome beta. It works in the Firefox 4 beta. And it works in the WebKit nightlies.
Now, so is this a complete JavaScript thing?
It is WebGL in JavaScript,
oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty neat, you know. So cool. That's like a present for everybody that's free.
So go and take a look at how a body actually works. It's really a lot like those books about anatomy, except that it's completely animated and you can fly around it and zoom in and look at everything.
It's like Google Earth for a body.
For a body.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you click on different elements and it tells you the name of it.
Oh, click on something. Click on the spleen. What? Or just some random organ.
The spleen's a little hard to get to.
I know.
It can be done. It's just... It
lower intestines.
I got the small intestine.
Good.
Is that good enough? Or?
Yeah, it's perfect. Tell us more about the small intestine.
Well, it's...
It just says small intestine.
It says small intestine.
Nice. Oops. But it fades out the rest of the world.
Yeah, I guess that would be the next step is you do small intestine and then look up, you know, some other aspect to it. I don't know, maybe do a Google search on it and look up Wikipedia.
You'd think it would just pull in Wikipedia like Google Earth does. I love that about Google.
Oh, wait, is Wikipedia a Google product? No, so I don't think they'll do that.
But they do on Google Earth. You click on a building or something and boom, little...
I thought that was users put in the link.
Maybe. Maybe you're right.
It's neat, though. It reminds me of those books you used to get as a kid that had the, like, cellophane, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
you just,
you'd always look for that page in the encyclopedia. Hey, where's the human body page? And then it has the little clear plastic things you can flip.
All right, the Google Body Browser, available for your newest browsers. Okay, let's talk about something more local, California.
Yes, a company known as Solar Reserves has received the green light to make a solar thermal, a molten salt solar energy project.
Okay, explain.
And this is something that is, I think, very cool, the real way to go with regard to solar power. Most of what we know from generating electricity with solar power is through photovoltaics.
Which translates the light right into electricity.
Right. It converts photons directly to an electrical current. And those require green rooms. They're semiconductors, which means they also require some materials that, you know, you're basically competing with the computer industry to try to do that. And the amount of area required, it's the solar constant of every square meter, you get about a kilowatt.
Which is, I mean, that's the basic level of energy we can get from the sun on the surface of the planet. But the thing you're talking about the complications about using the semiconductor is that you've got to make a really pure crystal. You've got to imbue it with
Well, you don't have to. There are solar panels that don't have that. You don't do in a clean room. They're just not very efficient.
What's the molten salt part of it?
So the whole point behind this is that you have a tower. That's what the image that I'm looking at right now. And if you go up to the website, you'll be able to see this image as well. Is you have a tower that at the top is sodium in a bath, so elemental sodium, and surrounding it on the ground are a whole bunch of mirrors, all forming in a wide area, something approximating a parabolic shape, and they're all focusing the energy at that one point at the top of the tower where that salt bath is, and that heats up, and the heat ends up heating up steam. You turn a turbine, how most energy is electricity is produced, and salt has such a great way of keeping that heat as well, so that when the sun goes down, it can still produce electricity because the heat store is still there.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with the heat? Just heat up water and turn into steam and turn a turbine.
Yeah.
Standard way to do it with coal and nuclear.
Yeah.
So that's hooked up to the middle of this mirror array somehow?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, we can talk about just the traditional ways of generating electricity. You've got a coal plant or a fuel plant.
It's really big.
Well,
I'm thinking of a solar panel, but this is like gigantic.
This is
like
a wide area. We're talking about tens or hundreds of acres.
It's like a canyon.
But I mean, so let's be real clear about how electricity is created. You make a giant motor, a generator, and you spin it, and you'll get electricity out of it. Right? Mm-hmm. That's how your alternator works in your car. So now you have to spin that somehow. We've got dams, water hydraulics, right? Mm-hmm. You just have the water run through it, and you basically push turbines. And then all the other ones are, you superheat water until it becomes a vapor, a gas. And then you run that gas, steam, through a turbine.
It increases pressure, and then you have a pressure differential of basically where the source is and then the exhaust.
Right.
And that
motion. So we heat that water with nuclear energy, we heat that water with coal, we heat that water with gas, We do it with oil and all those electrical generators. They really are heating up steam, heating up water to run turbines. So this is just another way to do that.
Right.
And I'm assuming that the molten stuff, this salt, actually you flow water through it and superheat the water.
Or nearby, yeah.
I shouldn't say superheat because that has a very specific meaning.
Right, and that sodium is running at temperatures over 1,000 degrees.
Wow, cool.
Imagine putting a magnifying glass and a whole bunch of magnifying glasses at a single point. That's basically what's happening.
What's the James Bond movie? I even did a Google on this to try to figure it out. Do you know the James Bond movies where he actually is in a tower and there's a beam of hot energy, sun energy, going down?
Oh, I don't recall.
They basically mix the two different technologies, right? The thermal and then the solar cell. And they basically have a super active solar cell in the movie. But you don't remember, so who cares?
I wonder if they have a problem with birds landing on that molten part in the middle there.
I would say not landing, maybe getting close.
I mean, I would imagine the air surrounding it would be extremely uncomfortable for a bird to want to come nearby.
Yeah, you'd definitely want to do this in the desert. You wouldn't want a lot of moisture in the air.
Yeah,
because then you get a lot of thermal differentials. That's cool. So they're going into production. I mean, we talked about this on a Geek Speak years ago.
Something that most people don't know about. I was talking with someone recently who is off the grid. Where if you have a very hot day, solar panels, photovoltaics, are not as efficient. You actually don't want to have them in the middle of the Arizona desert.
Because you don't want them hot?
Because you don't want them that hot. You want them to be a reasonable temperature, something that we would consider comfortable.
That makes sense, of course.
And no cloud cover. You want those two things. So this, it doesn't matter. You can be in the desert. In fact, being in the desert
is awesome
because you can get even hotter. The only problem is you do need to have a differential. You need to have a cold and a hot in order to have that.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Elam. Al, what's going on with really good storage lately?
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. It's out of the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and they have shown how to store encrypted data in bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So they took a colony of E. coli.
And it's always E. coli.
It's got to be E. coli. and they took the amount of data that's the equivalent of the United States Declaration of Independence. And they took that data.
That's not very much. Go on.
Well, it's enough to be start a country or whatever. So they took that and they stored it in the DNA of 18 bacterial cells.
Okay.
So there's 10 million cells present in 1 gram of biological material. So that's a data storage capacity of 90 gigabytes.
Okay, so they just encoded the Declaration of Independence into three different organisms. And then those organisms multiplied, and you had duplications of that data until you got to a point where it's 90 gigabytes per 1 gram of bacteria.
I don't think they talk about it multiplying.
Well, I mean, that's why you do it with bacteria, is that they can duplicate themselves.
Well,
I'm assuming that's what it's about. Because if they just did the Declaration of Independence, I mean, we're talking kilobytes, not gigabytes.
Well, I think...
not even kilobytes.
Well, yeah, it would be...
Yeah.
I think just getting
the Declaration of Independence... Miles, you know it by heart, right? Go ahead.
Start. Well, I think it's just getting the data in the bacteria, which is the cool thing.
Yeah, encoding it into DNA.
Into the DNA, yeah. There's a little bit of a problem.
So then if you store your email... You still have junk DNA? Spam? Sorry.
See, I for one, welcome our debilitating stomach flea producing overlords.
Yeah, they have a problem.
He's back, ladies and gentlemen. He's back.
They have a problem reading the data. It's
it's there, we promise.
It's not quite as good reading, but they've somehow been able to prove that they can store it in bacteria.
You can read it, but the hard drive smells horrible.
It is.
Ew. Your data stinks.
Don't lick that hard drive. Were you licking that hard drive? Sounds like something I'd say to my son. Did you just lick that? Yeah. Well.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. But so they're storing data and bacteria.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So now we know that the E in E. coli stands for exabyte.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they say
now I really want to know what it stands for.
They say that the bacteria it's more resilient than normal storage because it can continue to live even like after nuclear explosion, you know, all this kind of stuff. So even if you were storing data in bacteria, you know, maybe the United States would be flattened, you know, but there'd be the Declaration of Independence somewhere.
Stored in DNA ASCII equivalent.
And so if some alien came along and tried to I guess it's...
For some reason, the organisms that lived in the guts of these people had a foundational legal document embedded in them. We don't really understand. Really.
We got out of there quick.
We were going to conquer, we were going to conquer them, but they had such great philosophy in their gut flora.
Okay. Awesome. All right, we talked a little bit about spam in the last message, and of course about the founding documents and stuff. So let's talk about a little something about email and maybe amendments or something. I don't know, something like that.
Oh, that was probably the worst segue ever.
Oh, they get worse.
I don't know, the president of the segue company, that one was probably the worst.
The Electronic Freedom Foundation, I guess the best way to describe them would be they're the internet version of the ACLU, have worked together in terms of they've filed briefs on behalf of certain cases, one in particular, U.S. versus Warshak, which is considered
Warshak. The superhero?
No, not Rorschach.
Yeah. Cool.
The Sixth Circuit of Appeals, Court of Appeals, has ruled that the government must have a search warrant before it can secretly seize and search emails.
Interesting. When did this happen?
This happened, or at least I heard about it, on December 14th.
How old is the... I mean, how big is the... Where in the judicial system was it ruled?
The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Oh, hi.
Which, yes, this is the Federal Court of Appeals. This is one step below Supreme Court, and I'm trying to remember now where the Sixth Circuit Court is based.
I don't understand something. I mean, I get the reason for that. That makes a lot of sense. But why is it that there's so much concern about email sniffing and such when it's really easy to encrypt emails so no one can see it but you? So
it's not all that easy. Technically, we can conceptualize it, but how many people do you know have email programs where it's just, hey, click a button and we're generating a certificate for you and you're... Well, none of the programs do it for you.
How many do you know? How many does the average person know?
Yeah, not the number of people who have done it. No, not the number of people who have done it. The number of programs that make it easy to do. And the answer, unfortunately, is
really
pretty much zero.
Well, I mean, there's a plugin for Apple Mail, but plugin doesn't count. And
that's what I mean. That's not easy. That's not...
I'm surprised Gmail doesn't support it. Of course, really wouldn't be very functional.
Right.
They unencrypted for you.
Well, I think it's not so much getting the email, it's being able to use it in a court of law. So, you know, they can't get it and then use it.
You know, well, I mean, it's also about looking at email. I mean, prior to this, they could look through the email. Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. They didn't. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, so a cop could go into your house and grab whatever they wanted and find the dead body in your bathtub, but unless they got a warrant to search your house, that's inadmissible.
Right, right. So now we're saying that email is protected in that same way.
At least to some extent.
Not your car in your driveway. That's public.
Not your car in your driveway.
I was just thinking about that earlier today. I saw a map at someone's house and the other day, and I was just thinking, like, it would be so cool to do an art project where all those, is it CIA or FBI, bug devices that are stuck under the bumper of cars.
I think it was the FBI who was doing
that. So it's a few Geek Speak episodes back. We talked about the FBI was able to put in these little tracking devices that basically phone home the location of a car over and over again, and they're battery operated, and they supposedly didn't need to use a warrant at all. They could just put them on any car as long as it was in a public space, and we talked a little bit about the politics of that. But anyway... I would love to see...
And you have to give them back
if you
find
it. If you find it, if you give it back. It's not
That's the part that really annoys me.
That's interesting. I should be able to put stuff on your car and get it back without a hassle. you know, they should at least pay for gas. But in any case, I'd love to see the data of where people are going. You know, that tracking information for an art project would be very cool. But let's move on, shall we? Let's do something futuristic and cool, like Star Wars. Or no, let's do Star Trek. Star Wars is in the past.
I got a Star Trek thing.
Star Trek. Let's do the future.
The website called Instructables. I think I've brought that up before. Well, there's an article on Instructables on how to make your own Star Trek sliding pneumatic doors.
Those ones.
And there's it's a little video of a guy using it. And it's got like a vent right above it. That kind of, you know, you are using air.
Right.
And they both go together. And
does it talk about how not to, you know, cut your cat in half? I mean, that's the thing. You know, a door, at least there's a sliding force. It doesn't seem that dangerous. You can, of course, crush your finger. But a sliding door that's air-compressed, air-powered, seems a little dangerous to me.
Well, yeah, I imagine you get your finger stuck in there, but it, well, you know, the way it works is you have to actually push a button, uh-huh, and then it opens up, and then
that's cool.
And then I think you have to push it to close it again.
The Instructables is cool because, of course, every part of the process is documented really well, and
right, you could be like planned, not know how to do anything except go to the hardware store, and you could probably do
and visit the website.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we'll have that link up
on Geekspeak.
I guess the danger comes about with how heavy that door is. If you have a heavy door and it requires a whole lot of pressure to be able to open and close it, that's going to cause a major problem. But if it's made of balsa wood,
right?
Yeah,
you know, like the original one, yeah,
or the
like the original Star Trek, that's where everything was foam rubber.
Of course, those were always manually controlled. There'd be two people, one on each side, opening them, closing them,
and someone off the camera going.
So actually,
that was post.
So actually, if you make these, your sliding Star Trek doors are better than the ones
that
they
use on the
ship.
Wow.
So just keep that in mind.
You're a heathen. You're going to hell. There's nothing better than the original Star Trek.
Well, I think every version of Star Trek had people pushing those doors open and closed, actually.
You've seen the bloopers, too, of that, right?
If, like, one door opening or them falling off the
They bang it, like, Kirk is walking through and they don't open the door. Because you have to, like, purposely walk through and just expect it to open.
Right.
You know, and there's all these, like, it's on YouTube, just typing Kirk sliding door or something.
That's fantastic.
And just see him bang.
I would have thought Riker would have been, you know, always leading with the shoulder everywhere.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, if you're on door duty, you got to pay attention to the actors.
Yeah.
Because you know when they smash through, it's not their fault.
I had always wondered, actually, when I was watching Star Trek, someone would be walking toward a door, and the last minute someone would call them away. So their momentum was heading toward the door, and the last minute they stop and turn going, what? And the door doesn't open in preparation for that.
It knows.
And they're like, yeah, okay. And they start to, like, pivot, and the door opens ready for them to walk out.
Fantastic. Those are some damn smart doors. You don't understand.
Smart doors.
There's, like, more AI in every one of those doors than the rest of the ship combined. And those doors never try to take over the ship, like the holodeck. Moving on.
I, for one, welcome my air pneumatic, human-powered Star Trek-style door overlords.
Okay, on this day of Christ's birthday... That's what's supposed to be, right?
Well, give or take him being born in the summertime.
Right. Anyway, we won't get into that. Sorry to...
The observance. That.
I've always liked Christmas. It's a wonderful holiday. But I got to say, it's very materialistic.
Yes.
You know?
Presents.
Hey, Biles, thanks for coming to see my show. Speaking of Christmas. I was just in a Christmas show talking about faith. Interesting for an atheist, huh?
I think I like the lights the best.
The Christmas lights?
Yeah, I like putting up lights.
You have great Christmas lights. Yeah. I went by your house the other day.
Right. Yeah, but you know what?
Late at night and saw them.
They're not up now because it's been rainy and I shorted out the whole outer.
No.
I have redwoods in front and the lights go right up the redwoods and somewhere in there there's one of them got wet and the circuit keeps breaking.
Are you gonna fix them before tonight?
It's still kind of rainy out there, so I don't know.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about creationism, shall we, Miles? I was trying to lead into that from Christmas.
Have to.
It didn't work really.
Well, the Gallup poll, people have heard about. They cover...
Every time I hear the Gallup poll, I think of like a stallion running on the beach.
Yeah. Yes, well, this particular stallion is telling us that 4 in 10 Americans believes in strict creationism. Now, to define
just refer yourself as a stallion, Miles?
Yes.
I love it.
4 in 10?
4 in 10.
Isn't that the same as like...
Well, 38%.
2 and 5?
Yes.
Okay. But no,
yes.
You know what? It's
yes,
8
we
in
can
20.
Do fractions
eight,
here on
8
Geek
out of
Speak.
20.
Wow, our math skills are strong.
Aren't you supposed to use the smallest denomination when you talk about fractions? Isn't there some...
They're talking about in 10.
Polite?
They always say that, like, you know, 3 and... Or 3. No, okay. I don't know. I 9 know. And 10 dentists say that... Their hair grows funny.
Right, and just to be clear, what strict creationism is that a deity, in this case the Christian God, created human beings as they existed today. There's been no change. Evolution does not occur. And this was about 10,000 years ago, give or take. So,
okay, that's 38%.
Yeah, 38% of Americans.
Believe strongly that that's the case.
Yes.
That took this Gallup poll.
Okay. Yes. Well, Gallup is pretty good about getting a good statistical sampling.
That's the thing I always am curious about polls is, you know, what does the data really look
like?
The
type of person that takes a poll believes this.
That's a better way of
saying
it.
They never called me.
Or I should say, the type of person that takes the poll answers this to this question.
Right.
Now, there is a nice wrinkle
wait,
to this.
Give us the definition again. They say, do you believe, and they said this? I don't know exactly. Or do they say, do you believe in creationism?
They give a bunch of different options. One being, human beings have developed over millions of years from less advanced forms of life, but God guided this process. Option two, human beings have developed over millions of years from less advanced forms of life, but God had no part in the process. Or three, God created human beings pretty much in their present form at one time within the last 10,000 years or so.
And 38% of Americans say the latter.
Right.
Of those three questions. How about you? How would you guys answer that? Think God has something to do with it?
Does it have anything to do with dinosaurs?
Yeah, as long as that God is the flying spaghetti monster.
Are you a flying spaghetti monster believer?
Oh, yeah, Pastafarianism all the way.
I like dinosaurs.
You like dinosaurs?
I don't want to do something that if
that denies dinosaurs.
That says dinosaurs.
Hey, man. the creation museums always have dinosaurs in there.
Do they?
They were on the boat and everything.
But don't those guys think that people rode dinosaurs and stuff like that? Like they were around at the same time?
Yeah.
I don't believe in that.
You don't believe that?
No.
Now, another wrinkle to this is that 4 in 10 Americans believing this, or 38%, is... Well, 38% is the actual amount. 38% is the actual amount. Is actually slightly fewer today than it has been in years past. That's actually
a
number
better.
In decline.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, let's be really clear. I don't know, you don't have to say this, but I firmly believe that we evolved. So, you guys okay with that?
Yes.
All right, let's move on.
Well, I think I've evolved.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that you've evolved.
Wow. I wouldn't say I've evolved. I'd say species evolve.
Yeah. Yes. It's an obvious thing.
Hey, White, how'd you get to be such a smart little monkey?
Evolution. That's what we taught my child when he was very young, right after he stopped crying about Miles' insults to him. Or that was me that was crying about your insults to my son.
Yes. So now that we're all going to hell.
What was a nice Christmas story.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Miles Elam and Al Luckow. We are taking... no calls today because, well, we don't want to. No, actually, because Rick's on break today, unfortunately. But us lonely souls are here to tell you that GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specialize in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBTech.com. KOSP co-sponsors First Night Monterey, a community arts celebration in downtown Monterey on New Year's Eve. This year's theme, Imagine, Create, Imagine, offers the best in music, performance, dance, and interactive art activities for all. With 75 performances and a finale to ring in the new year, information is available at firstnightmonterey.org. That's firstnightmonterey.org. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, Miles Elam and Al Luckow. We are here in the air room in beautiful Santa Cruz chatting about the geek news of the week. I want to let you know that, you guys, I'll talk to you and all everybody. The other day, I was hanging out at a potty and ran into Peter Weiss.
Weiss.
Yep. He didn't introduce himself as Peter. He just said Peter. But anyway, this is the singingscientist.com. Pretty cool.
Cool.
And I was like, that's very geeky. And he handed me a CD to look at, and I thought that one would be kind of appropriate. And since it's kind of a Christmassy day, and there's probably a lot of family sitting around listening to Geek Speak, I thought we'd play a little bit of it today. This is The Place They Call Away.
Little boy washed his hands, he scrubbed them like he knew he should. Then he got himself a paper towel and dried them real good. And as he dried his hands, he noticed a trash can sitting there square and gray. And all of a sudden he wondered, where exactly is the place they call away? What will happen to the paper towels and the ones already used? So many have been thrown away, he started to feel confused. He wanted to follow the path of the trash, starting right here today. So he got in the can with the paper towels to find the place they call away. janitor came to empty the can just after 6 o'clock. The paper towels and the little boy were headed to the loading dock. They all got tossed in a big green dumpster, but he was not afraid. He knew that he was one step closer to the place they call away. The dumpster, the boy, he felt even more confused. There were so many things that could be recycled or reused. So much paper and plastic too, and a chair with a broken leg. There was a table and a TV too in the place they call away, with a broken lamp and an old rug. He set up his living room. If only he had electricity, he could watch cartoons. Then all of a sudden, the dumpster got loaded on a truck and then a train. There seemed to be a whole lot more to the place they call away. After a ride of many days, he came to a giant pit. Then there was a mountain of trash right there next to it. He'd heard about landfills and how they're a place where trash will always stay.
Sometimes. That's Peter Weiss, singingscientist.com. You can get the album, singingscientist.com. I hate to cut it out, but we're a talk show, and I feel like playing music too long will just drive away our millions of fans, so I'm not going to. But I got to say that he says a couple things kind of cool in his CD. It's totally fun. I mean, I guess maybe for me and you. Cause
it reminds
kids,
me of They Might Be Giants. You know, they do that stuff.
That's awesome stuff, too. Yeah. Here Comes Science is their most recent album. Really cool stuff. He's an atmospheric chemist, chemistry researcher, and he's a science teacher and folk rock musician, clearly. And be warned, though, after listening to this album, children may encourage their parents to walk instead of drive or cycle and buy less stuff. I hope the message gets through, he says on a CD. So, Peter, thank you so much for the CD, and singingscientist.com if you want to pick up a copy for yourself or learn more about him or listen to more of his songs, of course, before doing so. In listening to this CD on the way in to KOSP this morning before the show, I thought this is what I experienced all last week is buying new stuff. I hadn't been into, like, a real size Target before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, really? Are you okay?
It would hurt. Yeah. It happened on Tuesday, and I was still in shock yesterday. Last night I was crying myself to sleep. Mm-hmm. But what it got to me, and it's always this thing that creeps me out at, like, grocery stores. If you go through a grocery store and you look at the diapers in the grocery store are purchased to be used within a week. They basically, all that stuff is gone within 2 weeks. All the diapers are all in landfills within 2 weeks, which is creepy because, of course, diapers you don't do anything else with but put them in landfills.
Yeah.
So you can kind of assess how much stuff we're putting in landfills.
Right.
And when I was going through Target, I was looking at this stuff. I'm like, you know, that's not going to survive a year. Like, I can tell most of the merchandise, no offense to this, you know, manufacturer or whatever, that stuff doesn't last more than a year. And so to me, it's just really sad to see so much. It's a line in the play. I was about to say something else. it's so sad to see so much product being produced that won't last a year.
Right.
And, you know, last year, my girlfriend, Maggie and I talked about going for a year without buying any new stuff and only, you know, repair stuff. And you can buy materials, you can buy, you know, things that you would make new things with, but in general, can't buy new stuff. And I'm tempted to do this year. You know, it's a perfect time to start. You want to join me on that? It's a hard one, huh?
So,
what do you think, Miles?
I was actually thinking, listening to NPR last week, it talked about electronics recycling and the failure of it, how much stuff ends up overseas in toxic environments. And as I listened to it, it really did remind me of, wow, what industry am I in again? Wait, how much technology do I have in my house? And I have given to an electronic recycler, and I did go to one that said, like, oh, just drop the stuff off, it's fine. And those are exactly the ones that end up, you know, overseas. And
well, you know, just in general, it's not even the recycling aspect, it's trying to reuse. We I mean, my iPhone, I broke within like a month of buying an iPhone 4, right? And the screen is cracked. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, come on, you gotta fix that, you gotta fix that. Come on, you're a geek, you gotta fix it. And I haven't. It functions, right? It's got a cracked screen, but it functions. And I can do everything I can do on a phone. There's nothing wrong with it.
It is a little weird that it works with a cracked screen.
Yeah, it's just the glass on the top. The sensing pad's not damaged. But the thing that gets me is that the way that phone will be, quote, fixed, is I will give them $200, and they will take my phone. They will give me a brand new phone. They will take that other phone, and they will recycle it completely down. You know, they'll burn, you know, destroy it, and just take it to raw materials. Most likely, they might take out the board, but most likely not. They'll just rip it apart. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's such a wasteful experience. Like it seems so bad. But then, you know, recently there was a table at work. You know, and one of the legs was wobbly, and I could have gone to the hardware store and got this piece, and then or gone over and welded it or something, and spent some time and made that table work again. But instead, we tossed it, we cycled it. I mean, we didn't, you know, throw it away. We didn't landfill it, but we recycled it. And it's like, that's a big waste in our society. It is. Just such a... Anyway, that's depressing,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about this, you know, on Christmas.
So, yeah, you opened some presents this morning? Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you look
I try to buy materials and stuff that I think is going to be around for a while. You know, I try to buy stuff that's strong enough to last. Yeah. But they don't always do it.
Well, you look at the grocery bags you get at the grocery store, and they change the print design on it for like the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's snowflakes on it or something. And I'm thinking, why don't they just always keep the same design on there? Because then you can just sort of reuse them, because you never see those snowflake bags later, or they look weird or out of place. And when you know, it's just like they're setting themselves up to make it more of a commodity and sort of use these up. Whereas, because I feel like, you know, once you end up with all these paper bags and, you know, you recycle them, they're already bags. They don't need to be recycled and made back into bags, because they're already bags. And there's nothing wrong with the bags, because when they remake them, they'll be just
nothing,
like this.
There's nothing wrong going to a grocery store with a few paper bags. It's not a problem. You go to a grocery store with a few paper bags, hand them to the clerk, they'll use them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Should we move on to something less depressing? Yeah. What do you got there? I got something that ties in pretty well to this.
Well, going to the store anyway. Well,
oh, you know, one thing I want to say. Next week on Geek Speak, I'm going to ask you guys what your, you know, it'll be the first, right? Yeah. And we'll talk about, what is it called when you make a declaration of what's going to happen?
Resolution.
Thank you very much. We'll be doing that next year, next week. Yeah. And next year, imagine that. Yeah. So if you've got a New Year's resolution, I'm talking to all you listeners out there, and you'd like to share with us, specifically if it's a geeky one, please email us. Go to geekspeak.org, give a recommendation. We do still have something we're going to be giving away, and if we have an awesome suggestion, I'm sure we could give something to you. But Al, do tell us about
this
thing.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. It's something we all, or at least I experience a lot, is when you're at the store and you're ready to make a purchase, and you go up to the cashiers, and there's three cashiers, and there's three lines, and you look at them, and you get in one, and you got in the slowest line.
Yes.
You know, I always feel like turning around and telling somebody, you know, don't stand behind me because I'm obviously in the slowest line, and I always pick it. And the funny thing is, you've got a much more likely chance of picking the slowest line than you do of picking the fastest line.
Why?
Well, it's what they call queuing theory, and there's a really good video on this by Bill Engineer Guy Hammack. It's he's kind of a personality, you know, and he goes and he explains queuing theory, how it was developed. I guess this was developed years ago by a Danish engineer named Anger Erlang, and he did it for the Copenhagen Telephone Company to figure out how many trunk lines you need to have come into a city so that multiple people won't get, you know, backed up in calls.
Sure.
And so he developed the system, but this guy Bill. Engineer guy Hammack, he takes that same thing and applies it to queue theory for going through the cashier, and it really does. When you watch this video, it you start to understand how if you have three lines and you're going in, you have six possibilities of arrangements, and so you really only have a one out of three chance of getting in the fastest line.
Mm-hmm.
So you have less chance of that. And which is really obvious when you watch this video, and it's quite—he's quite entertaining
sounds
guy.
Like the Monty Hall problem, actually, too. But go on.
Yeah, yeah. The same exact thing. Which behind which curtain? But yeah, it's a really interesting kind of thing. And the one thing that he said, though, the stores that are smart, use the kind of line like, you know, at Fry's where you just, everybody gets in one line.
Right.
And then there's a whole, there's like the cashiers.
Right. And they call you forward.
Yeah. And that is way, way faster. It's always, but the reason that all stores don't do that is because psychologically people like to, in their own mind, jockey for position.
They like
and
the control
factor. And so it makes people weirded out when they do the one long line.
Well, you do feel like cattle when you're in that long line at like a Fry's or something.
And people like to think that they're, you know, getting in the shorter line.
You know, they're most likely making a mistake.
But the lines are all, every one of them is slower because of that. You know, it makes the whole thing. Because the randomness of one person having a problem or a price check or whatever, it just makes everything slower to have multiple. Everything would be better if you just have one line and then one person at a time went.
Sure. All right. Well, queuing theory on GeekSpeak. Thank you very much, Alan. Mr. Elam.
Well, let's hit the world of statistics.
We just kind of were, but go on.
Well, continue in the world of statistics then.
Do so.
There's a gentleman by the name of Hans Rosling, and he is a statistician, and he was covered by the BBC recently. A wonderful video that putting up on the website, which is him explaining the last 200 years of global history in terms of wealth or income and lifespan.
Okay.
So it has all these countries that you go back 200 years, you have a whole lot of, basically every country had a life expectancy below 50 years. Like you weren't expected to live that much longer. Also, infant mortality really does push that down a bit.
Right.
And then he plots all different countries, different regions, and color codes them by what part of the world they're in, and makes them, plots them as a circle, where the size of the circle determines the population, the relative population.
I think I've seen this map, but go on.
Right. And as it goes through, he just like talks through as the dates go up and up and up, and you start seeing some nations pulling away and getting more wealth and pushing, and the income goes along with the lifespan. But then you're also seeing other nations that aren't quite following along with the wealth also getting the lifespan bump
increased.
Up.
Okay.
And
why?
It doesn't go into that, but it is very interesting to look at, just because we all have our assumptions about how the world works, and statistics properly applied really does upset what we think of as being true with the world. And so that's the starting point to know, like, oh, well, my basic assumption was right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And then taking that extra leap and going, why is that the case?
You're talking about going with data first.
Right.
Looking at what the data says and then trying to assess what that means.
Exactly.
Fascinating. What about the situation where wealth gets high enough where life starts decreasing? I'm thinking of obesity in the United States, but again, we have a pretty good medical system, so maybe that's not a potential problem. I mean, have we seen a decline in the last 30 years in the United States?
A decline in health?
No, in life expectancy basis income.
I do not believe so. Okay, life expectancy continues to increase, yeah.
We just get better and better at fixing broken bodies.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Miles. Well, Mr. Luckow, I think we have time for another one at least. Athletes and robots.
There's a cool robot. It's an athletic robot, and they've been working on trying to get a robot to run. And this Japanese researcher, his name is
just start tasting it.
Ryuma Niyama, and he wants to build a biped robot that runs. And the way he did it is pretty cool. It's not like Asimo, who is like a big bulky kind of robot that
falls downstairs.
Yeah, this thing has like leaf springs for legs. So the whole bottom part of the leg is this big metal
curved
piece of flat metal.
This is
metal.
Like the paraplegic, the people that have lost, the amputees are able to run with just a lower below the knee kind of spring
it's
thing.
It's got a spring to it. And he calls his robot Athlete.
Mm-hmm. Does it?
I guess he thought of that name himself.
Do you have a video of it running?
Yeah, there's video of it. We have links of all this stuff on geekspeak.org.
Is it fast?
It's pretty fast, and it actually can run. It does wipe out finally, though. It doesn't really.
And I bet it can't climb trees.
It can't climb trees, thank God. because we don't need any sprinting robots that can climb trees.
Yeah, I, for one, welcome our new robotic Jesse Owens wannabe overlords.
Yeah.
Nice.
But it's a pretty neat
thing.
Do you
use them on the fly, or do you write them down first? Thank you, Al. Yep. Mr. Miles Elam. We talked about Google earlier, but let's do it some more.
Well, we talked about Google Chrome OS coming out a couple weeks ago, and then last week you guys covered a little bit.
Well, we just talked about it early in the show with the human body. We talked, you know, talked about the Nose browser. That's why I mentioned it. But yeah,
right. Chrome OS being the operating system for a netbook style, where there's no local storage. It's all up in the cloud. It's all using, for example,
we
Google
did
services.
Did talk about it in a recent episode of Geekspeak. I'm not sure.
We talked about it. I know I talked about it 2 weeks ago. Okay. But one area that we didn't touch on very much was something that Richard Stallman, who we've had on the show before, who talks about computing freedom. We didn't talk about the aspect of losing control of your data. One of the things that the GNU Software Foundation has always worked for, this is the organization that Richard Stallman began many years ago, was that you should always be able to fix, you know, some piece of software that you purchased or licensed.
The same kind of thing I was talking about products that you want to be able to fix instead of recycle.
Right.
Same kind of ideas.
Yeah, it's if you buy a table, you should be able to sand down an edge so that it doesn't wobble anymore. Same principle applies for many people with regard to computing, that you get a piece of software, something isn't working right, you should have the right to be able to
change
sand
it.
Down an edge to make it not wobble anymore. And when you have something like Chrome OS, you don't have that option anymore. Yes, you have some software that's running on your computer, but for the most part, the software is now running on a remote server, or that the software is not under your control anymore. It's a snippet of JavaScript that comes down to your browser and executes locally, but you have no direct access to.
Right.
Or rather, you could have access to it, but it's not going to do you any good.
I mean, we're basically talking about the whole web application idea is that you've got a front-end browser that doesn't do a lot of store, doesn't do a lot of smart stuff, and the back-end server side does all the smart stuff.
Right.
And that's kind of a web application in general. And as you do an OS like that, as you kind of say, everything's going to be on the back-end. There is no local storage. There is no heavy processing on the front-end.
Yeah, not just the back-end, though. It's a back-end that, as individuals, we have no control over that. It's a centralized with some company
as opposed
to... In fact,
you can't even backwards engineer it. Because with Word, for example, if I wanted to hack it, I could theoretically decompile it and then try to recompile it, and I could maybe invert and stuff. It would be a disaster, but it's possible theoretically. In this situation, the code is actually never local until it's running. It's like runtime code is coming across.
Well, 90% of it is never on your
machine.
System.
Right, right. Interesting. And then even the snippets that it come across are coming as in runtime rather than in pre, you know, it's not like you have a compiled application that you're running that's a website. You're actually getting snippets of JavaScript, as you said, coming down the pipe,
right.
And it's executing.
And we are talking about something like the cloud. When people talk about the cloud, you're talking about a amorphous blob of computing servers out there that are doing your work. And it has tremendous advantages where you're able to go on your desktop, check your email, and then look at your iPhone, and it's exactly
it's
the same information. You go to your work computer,
and
it's exactly
the
same.
Not to mention shared resource, right? You have a general cloud. You have general processing power. A lot of people are using it at once. It's more efficiently running, right, than everybody's computer being on at home and only being used a little bit. So to some degree, there's scale of conservation of scale, if you will, too.
Right.
But go on.
But the fact that this is... You know, for example, Gmail is up at Google, and that's where your IMAP server is. That's how you would connect up through your iPhone, for example. That there's no reason why it couldn't be hosted in your home. The only problem is that it's not going to get as updated as much as Gmail is. It means it's one more thing that you have to worry about backing up. It means, you know...
But don't you see...
That you have to take care of that infrastructure.
But I definitely see this need to be thinking about this, because... Right now, pretty much all my data is up on some service of, you know, all my email for, you know, 5 years, like that, or 10 years, is actually now on Gmail servers. I don't even have a local copy, really. And if they stopped giving it to me, I mean, they have a lot of power in that situation. They have a lot of my personal stuff somewhere else. And I've lost control of it. I've lost for benefit.
You do have a cached copy.
Yeah.
For a lot
I'm not
of
sure
that
if it's
stuff.
Up to date completely. I don't know if all the folders are there.
It could be if you chose to.
I changed the settings correctly, yeah. 7 gigs of mail. yeah, I see why we need to be... I mean, I think Stallman's probably looking at this in the way that he's so good at looking at it. And he's probably right, or I would say that somewhere between what Google's doing and what he thinks is right is probably right where we should be, and we're definitely not there. Thanks, Miles. This feels like a depressing episode of Geek Speak.
Well, it's Christmas.
Yay!
Well, it's network computing. I mean, it's the whole idea of a dumb terminal. I mean, that's what we're going back to.
Right. The question then comes is where is the server?
Of course, we have really smart terminals. It's not like our terminals are lacking the power. They definitely have the power.
Right. Right.
But it's just they're so ubiquitous at this point that we don't really want them to have it. Like, no. I have my laptop and my iPhone, and I'm on my iPhone checking my email probably more than my laptop. Mm-hmm. I write on my email on my laptop, but when I check my email, it's on my iPhone.
But it's actually very cool.
And the only reason that works is because of the cloud.
It's actually very cool with regard to an iPhone. iPhone's pulling down your email every 10, 15 minutes, depending. Some people longer, some people shorter.
You wait that long?
And the idea there is also it goes so quickly because everyone is doing it at a slightly different interval, at a slightly different 15-minute offset. And so you have this... the ability to consolidate all of the power of those servers to, you know, be dedicated to you for that short moment in time.
Right, rather than if I did have an IMAP server at home and I was checking every once in a while, that machine is not going to be doing anything.
It's mostly idle.
Burning electrons. That's all it's going to be doing. Thank you very much, Miles, for that. Al, let's talk about another cloud, shall we?
Another cloud. Oh, yeah, MagCloud. This is something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. And
oh, we ran out of time today on GeekSpeak. No, I'm just kidding.
I've had it in the news queue for weeks.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyhow, if you've ever wanted to make your own magazine, there's a company out there called MagCloud.com. And I this is affiliated with HP somehow. They're either using HP printers or something like that, or owned by HP, or I couldn't really figure it out. I think it's owned by HP. But anyhow, it's called MagCloud. And you can publish your own magazine, you know, 4 pages, or, you know, 50 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And the magazine, and I ordered one, because once you've posted it, other people can buy the magazine. So people, like, say you want to do a magazine on, you know, GeekSpeak and put all sorts of GeekSpeak stuff there. People can go to magcloud.com and they can browse the catalog of all the magazines available, and you can just buy them. And they're sort of like, you know, zines. Mm-hmm. You know, like people make zines. And, you know, if I had this as a kid, I would have been crazy about it. Because, I mean, I was making Xerox things.
So we're talking about basically it's a colored Xerox with a staple on it. You brought one into the station?
I did. Here it is.
Also, leaning over into...
There you go.
Oh, whoa, this you print? You specifically asked for this and printed it and printed for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of these are they're very professionally done, and they're really, really reasonably priced. So
man,
you get this thing.
Amazing.
You get it as a magazine, and it's sort of glossy and really nice. You can't tell that it's color printed, and that's why I ordered them before I talked about it, because I wanted to see the quality.
Yeah,
and
this talked about this a while ago.
Yeah, this is a really nice quality, and it doesn't cost you anything until you can buy it.
Very cool. We have all this information up at geekspeak.org. Of course, today on GeekSpeak, Al Luckow and Miles Elam. My name is Lyle Troxell. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. Miles, Al, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Car Talk on KSP is made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County, and we appreciate their support. Merry Christmas, everyone. See you next
Christmas.
Year.